any time to sing, and I know that's what everybody comes here for anyway, to sing and not listen to. I'm just getting over to listen to me. But tonight, you know, a lot at these classes, a lot of times we talk about things as college students, what we struggle with, the temptations that we face as college students, because, you know, there's a whole list of things that are harder for us to deal with and that we see every day that adults or little children don't see as often as we do. And I'm not going to give you another one of those tonight because you hear them a lot. I just kind of want to give a real story, something that happened to me, something that I struggle with, a problem that I had, and kind of how I worked my way out of that. And so I'd like to talk about that tonight. And I'd just like to, if you don't mind, ask that you don't make any comments while I'm talking about it. It's not the easiest thing in the world for me to talk about, as you might can imagine. So I'm going to try to get through it and say it how I want to say it. And so if you have just a comment you feel that you have to make, I'm not going to not let you make that. But I just ask that that you just let me just say it how I feel like it's best needs to be said. When I was around 16, 17 years old, a junior in high school, I started developing a problem going to parties and drinking. First problems, why this happened, I'm not blaming this on these people, but this was a big thing that led to it, was I started hanging out with people that said they were Christian, people that, you know, had been baptized, that were members of the Church of Christ, and those people weren't living like they should, and those are the people that I chose as my friends, and so if they started doing something bad, then I saw that as okay to do, and you kind of let your guard down a little bit when you're around other Christians, because you feel that you're all in this together, so whatever one of you does, then it's okay for the rest of you to do. And it's not okay to just let your guard down whenever you're around Christian. You have to. You can't just assume that whatever they do is going to be right. So I started developing this problem, and it didn't start out terrible. It was just if I would hang out with them, and at first it was just peer pressure. But then as time went on, I'm not even going to try to act like it was peer pressure anymore. It was me voluntarily doing it. I was choosing to do all these things. Some of them were my idea to go somewhere and drink and things like that. And I started losing interest slowly, and maybe it was faster than I realized, in spiritual things. When I was started in like sixth grade, maybe, I went to FC camp. About 10th grade, I stopped going to FC camp. I didn't have any interest in doing that anymore. Why do you want to go to a place where they're going to talk about spiritual things if you have zero interest in spiritual things? Went to Young Men's Leadership Camp in Roosevelt, but I went there after my 8th and 9th grade years. Stopped going there. I didn't have any interest in going where people were going to be talking about all these spiritual things, going to be telling me everything I'm doing is wrong. I didn't have any interest in doing that. I used to enjoy leading, singing, giving talks and things like that. I hated when my time came later on in my high school years to do things like that. I couldn't stand, because why do you want to go somewhere, take a leading role in somewhere where everybody is actively against what you're doing? And it was a problem that I had. And one of the biggest problems with why I got into this was because I thought somehow that I could find a way to be happy doing this. I thought that this was how you can be happy in this world. You know, if everybody's doing it, it looks like fun from the outside. So this is how you become happy, right? If you do all these things. Turn me to Proverbs chapter 23. Proverbs chapter 23. I'm going to start reading in verse 29. Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has contentions? Who has complaints? Who has wounds without cause? Who has redness of eyes? Those who linger long at the wine, those who go in search of mixed wine. Do not look on the wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it swirls around smoothly. At the last, it bites like a serpent and stings like a viper. Your eyes will see strange things, and your heart will utter perverse things. Yes, you will be like one who lies down in the midst of the sea, or like one who lies at the top of the mast, saying, "They have struck me, but I was not hurt. They have beaten me, but I did not feel it. When shall I awake that I seek another drink?" It's almost amazing to me how dead on this passage is with what drinking and partying and all that. It hits the nail on the head. It talks about it sparkles in the cup, swirls around smoothly. At the last, it bites like a serpent. Now, it's fun for a little while, and then later on in the night, it starts hitting you, and you start, I've seen some terrible things. I've seen people falling asleep in their own vomit. I've seen people get in fights with their best friends. I've seen breakups happen because of something they said. I've seen people are always having to apologize for something that they said to somebody last night. Talks about your heart, your eyes will see strange things, and your heart will utter perverse things. It will shock you, the things that come out of your mouth when you're doing things like this. It blows your mind, things that you never heard around your home, that your friends never said, but for some reason, you're saying these things. They have struck me, but I was not hurt. They have beaten me, but I did not feel it. So all these things, like the passage is saying, these are just stupid. Why would you want to do all these things? And he says, "When shall I awake that I may seek another drink?" That's how it goes most of the time, isn't it? People complain, like, the hangover is terrible. I hate it. I feel sick the next day. I'm spending too much money on this. Then the next night, they're doing it all over again. It doesn't make any sense. There is no happiness to be found in partying and drinking. You can't find any. I tried. There is nothing in it. You know, what's that in our Constitution that it says we have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? That's about all you're going to get in that, is just the pursuit of happiness. You're not going to actually find any. All you're going to be doing is you're going to think you solve a problem by doing that, and you're drowning out your sorrows, and all you do is create another problem. Then you're having to drown that problem out, and you just create another one. There is no peace, no happiness in drinking, and it caught me. I didn't realize this going in, and I started to figure out the more I got into it. And one of the scariest things to me is thinking about how many times after I had been drinking, I got behind a wheel or rode with somebody that had been drinking when they started driving. And I hear all these stories of people that were driving drunk and died, were riding with somebody that were killed by a drunk driver. And it's a wonder that the same thing didn't happen to me. I don't know why God allowed me to nothing bad to happen to me in that area. I don't, because it happens to people all the time. One little mistake and I could have been in jail for a long time. I could have been dead. But God is, I'm still here to this day, and I thank God for that quite often, for him still allowing me to be here. And as I was going along with this, people that I went to church with and my family, they could tell that I was fading away. They could tell that I wasn't interested in things I used to be interested in. And some of them talked to me about that, including my family. But I didn't want to hear them. I mean, what's the most common thing when you're 16, 17 years old? You think your parents are dumb, that they don't know what they're talking about, that you've got more things figured out than they do. And I didn't want to listen to them. But after my senior year, it was obvious I needed to get away, to move somewhere, get away from the same people I'd always hung out with, the friends that I'd made. And my dad had a talk with me before I came to Auburn and said, "You know, you need to. I notice you're not very strong right now. One of the best things you need to do is you need to just get out of the high school mode once you go to Auburn." And I mean, that didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I was just like, I mean, Dad, I'm going off to Auburn. I'm going to be paying my own rent, going to a college, not living at home anymore. I mean, obviously, I'm going to be out of the high school mode. I'm on my own now. I didn't realize how true of a statement that was that I needed to do until I got off on my own, because I didn't get out of that high school mode. I still talk to those same people. I would still go visit them. I was stuck in a rut of the same activity, and I didn't even know what I was doing anymore. I did not recognize myself when I was looking at me anymore. I couldn't hold spiritual conversations anymore than anyone, because I was as unspiritual as you could possibly be at that time, that the spiritual conversation was just foreign to me. I didn't know how to talk to people, to Christians anymore. And it was a terrible rut that I got. I mean, I was, as some of you may know that are already here, I didn't go to much when my freshman year. I would skip Bible class. I didn't come to church all the time. I didn't ever come to any of these college classes or men's studies or anything. I was stuck in a rut, and it was a problem. Didn't have any type of relationship with God, and it was bad. That's about all that I can say. And I eventually reached a point where I realized I wasn't even a good person anymore. Like I was, you know, there's some people that, you know, they get into all that and they like doing that, but they're still good people. There's a point where I realized I wasn't even a good person anymore. I wasn't nice to people. I was rude all the time. I just wasn't a good person anymore. And even realizing that wasn't enough of a wake-up call for me. There's two things that I can call to remembrance right now that were a huge reason why I was able to somewhat get out of this. One was before my sophomore year started, I'm a junior now, so my sophomore year was last year. I went up to stay with my brother in Bowling Green. And he had a girlfriend. He's married now. But then he was kind of talking to me about how he might be getting engaged later on. And he told me, he said, so are you still doing, you know, all the things that you always do? And I mean, I was just like, yeah. Because, I mean, he knew that I had problems. And he pretty much told me, you know, you need to snap out of it. He's like, you know better than this. Your parents are worried about you. I'm worried about you. You're not setting a good example for your sisters, for anyone else that you know. You need to snap out of it. And he even told me, he said, you know, right now you're in the running to be my best man at the wedding. You know, you're my brother, and you're the obvious choice. He said, if you keep going along, you might mess that up. And when he told me that what I was doing was affecting him that badly, that was a huge wake-up call for me. I don't think to this day I thank you for that, and I need to. He might not have realized how much of an impact it had on me, but it did. And there's one other thing, was that someone from here, I said I wasn't going to say his name, but I might. Well, David made an effort to. He made an effort to talk to me, to call me, to come over and hang out with me, and I don't think I told him how thankful I was for that. And both of those things were huge and vital in me turning around. And I realized that I had huge changes that I needed to make. I was stuck in there. I hardly knew anyone from the church here. I hardly knew any Christians here. And I needed to make huge changes. So I started going out of my way to meet people. I mean, and you know how it is when you try to meet people. There's a lot of awkward conversations. You don't know what to talk about at the beginning. Usually, you know, you have that one thing that you talk about with somebody, and you just talk about that thing every time. And so, I mean, I was having those. I was having those awkward meetups. You know, every now and then you do the Facebook chat thing every now and then to try to meet people. But I mean, I was starting to get involved. So I started coming to every Bible class. I started going to as many men's studies as I could. When I wasn't out of town, I was at every one of these. I was trying to take a part in serving and worship, whether that was lead singing or, well, I never get lead singing anymore, but whether it's like, you know, prayers, Lord's Supper, giving a short talk, things like that. I was trying to get involved in as much as I could, and that, more than anything, is what I don't know if it saved me, because I haven't reached perfection at all. But surrounding yourself with spiritual things, with spiritual people, surrounding yourself with people that make you want to be better, is one of the best things you can do to get out of a rut like that. I surrounded myself with people in high school that my morals were better than theirs. So I knew what I was doing was wrong, but I still seemed like a better person than them. They didn't go to church like I did. I still seemed better, but when I start surrounding myself with people that are better than me, then I see all my shortcomings. I see how much I fall short, how much room for improvement that I have. And it challenges me, and I needed that. And it, I'm not sure where I'd be this day if those two things didn't happen. I would like to think that I could have gotten myself out of it, but both of those things happening were huge in getting me kind of out of that same thing. Because a lot of times, if something's uncomfortable, it's awkward meeting new people, going to a new town, going off to college. You're a freshman, you don't know that many people here. If it's awkward, what's the first thing you do? You slip back to whatever's comfortable, what you're used to. What was I used to? I was used to doing the partying scene. So that's what I did. You have to get over that. And you have to get past that those awkward moments. You have to start meeting people. Start doing as many things and surrounding yourself with the spiritual things. Because if you don't, you're never going to grow. You're never going to get better. And sin is going to overtake you so easily. I got overtaken by sin because I went to church, I was okay, but I wasn't strong enough to handle the peer pressure that I got. I would like to think that I can now, I know that temptation is as strong as ever, but I would like to think that the stronger you get, the more spiritual things you surround yourself with, the better you are to handle those types of things. So when we talk about Peter denying Jesus three times, I've always thought, like, that's ridiculous. Like, he's walked with Jesus these past 3 years. Jesus has done all these things, given him the keys of the kingdom, done all these things for him. And all the guy says is like, well, you were with Jesus. All he's got to do is say, well, yeah, I was. No, he denied him three times. I always thought, what a moron. Like, why would you do that? I'm telling you right now, I've denied Jesus a lot more than three times. Jesus has done just as much for me as he has Peter. He died for me just like he died for Peter. Forgives me just like he forgave Peter. And I've denied him a lot more than three times. And that it kind of puts it in perspective for me when I think about how many times I did deny him. How many times I didn't care about what he had done for me. I knew what I was doing was wrong against him, but still did it anyways because it felt good at the time. But I think, and I mean, some people might think this is wrong, but I think in the past couple of years that I've made major strides. I think those things, while it's different for everyone, I think doing those things can help us to grow. And I think it's helped me grow a lot. And I'm thankful to the good examples that I've had here from a lot of you. So I just like to talk about a couple lessons that I learned from all of that. One is that nothing good ever comes from the partying and the drinking scene. I've never heard of an incident where someone got drunk and went and worked for Project Uplift, or got drunk and went and painted an orphanage, or went drunk and, I don't know, took something to the recycling center. Whatever it might be, just a good deed that you can think of. I have never heard of people getting drunk and doing it. Like, nothing good ever comes from it. So I was saying earlier, I've seen people wake up in their own puke. I've seen people pass out in grass. People like wake up and not know where they are. People drive home and they don't remember anything about the drive home. I mean, I've had people that I knew that got in wrecks out when they were driving drunk, and they're now in jail. There's nothing good that ever comes out of it. You have no peace of mind, and it looks fun on the outside, and that's exactly what Satan wants us to think. He wants us to be like, man, those guys look like they're enjoying tailgating a lot more than we do. Like, Satan likes that. He likes that we think that we're jealous of them for that. I'm here to tell you, not only is it wrong, I'm just here to tell you that it's dumb. That it's pointless, nothing good ever comes out of it. There, it's not as fun as it might look. Turn me to 1 Corinthians chapter 15. And we'll read verses 9 and 10. For I am the least of the apostles, who am not worthy to be called an apostle, because I persecuted the church of God. But by the grace of God, I am what I am. And His grace toward me was not in vain, but I labored more abundantly than they all. Yet not I, but the grace of God, which was with me. I like reading this verse every now and then. Like, by the grace of God, I am what I am. Just to remind myself, like, whenever I start to think that, you know, I'm doing pretty good. I hadn't done a sin in a while. I haven't committed a sin in a while. But, you know, I think I'm doing pretty good. I like to read this verse every now and then. Just be like, you know, like, who are you, Kyle? Like, all these things you've done wrong, and here you are getting proud of something you've done. I like to remind myself, you know, like, by the grace of God, I am what I am. I could not be here today without that grace of God. When He said, I'm the least of the apostles, sometimes I like to think of myself that way. That all the wrong that I've done, like, it was just three solid years of just not caring one bit about Jesus or spiritual things or worshiping God. And it's by God's grace that I can still be confident to this day. It's not by anything I can do. By the grace of God, I am what I am. And I would encourage you all to, you know, look at where you are in your life. Look at the things that you have, what you've been blessed with. And, you know, just say, by the grace of God, I am what I am. Stop taking so much credit for everything you do. Thank God every now and then for where you are, for what you've done. For not being like me. You can thank God that you haven't gone through the things that I've gone through. A lot of people talk about, I hear a lot of worldly ideas, you know, live life with no regrets. So every now and then, if I'm talking to somebody about this, they'll say, well, do you regret anything? I mean, the answer is usually absolutely. Like, I mean, why wouldn't I regret? Oh, I wish I could take it all back. But I can't. So I plan on using it. I plan on using it to learn from it. I learned a lot about the emptiness of sin. You can hear that from the pulpit all you want. I'm not saying go out and try it and learn, like, you know, firsthand that there's emptiness of sin. But I've learned that it is empty. I've tried it. I'm not like Solomon or anything that was, you know, the richest and experienced everything under the sun. But I tried it. I tried to see if there's any happiness in it. And there's not. It's all empty. The friends you make doing that, living that kind of lifestyle, are useless. Your friends don't do anything for you. They're there for you if you're having fun, if everything's going good. But once things go get bad, if I had a flat tire, probably any of those friends that I did anything with would come, you know, come help me or do whatever needed to be done. But I think I have full confidence that a number of people here would come help me or anyone else here. If something like that happened, the friends you make living that lifestyle are nowhere close to the kind of friends that you make that are Christians. That will be there for you when you need them. I also learned and figured out how lost I was. I figured out how much I needed Jesus. I went to church growing up, baptized when I was. I feel like I should know this. I think it was nine or ten, somewhere around there. It was the month of August when I was baptized. I was baptized when I was 9 or 10. That's just the right thing to do. And I kind of went on, kept going to church. I always have my Bible lesson ready. So I don't think I felt properly lost then. But after going through this, I can say with full confidence that I felt lost. And I'm not saying that you have to go through this to feel lost. I'm saying to evaluate your life and see the wrongs that you've done and realize that you were lost. Appreciate that, or not appreciate, but realize the fact that you were lost, that you're not earning your salvation. That it's like something that I'm just all my willpower, and I'm going to do this, and I'm so much better than all those people that give in to temptation. No, we were all lost. And we need to realize that. That needs to humble us. Like we're talking about, by the grace of God, I am what I am. Go back and realize that without that grace, that we would all be lost. Also realize that certain things aren't talked about enough. Whether we want to admit it or not, we have a sin rating system. Subconsciously, we kind of do have that. There's certain things that if we hear about somebody, it's like, oh, I don't know about that. Like that's pretty bad. Like sexual immorality or drinking or homosexuality, what we talked about tonight, things like that. We're like, oh, if we hear somebody did that, then I don't really want to talk to them. Don't want to associate with them. And because of that attitude that we have, that it's like we can't even talk about it anymore. People that struggle with those things are so scared to go to someone and talk about it because they're so afraid they'll be immediately judged and written off. Oh, you struggle with sexual morality? You struggle with drinking? Oh, I don't want to talk to you anymore. I don't know anything about that. I don't struggle with that. Those are the bad ones. Now, lying, that's okay to do that every now and then, but these types of things, like that's really bad. We don't need to reach that point. We need to be the type of people where if somebody is struggling like I was with drinking, maybe there was people out there that I could have talked to about that, but I didn't feel it. Like, I felt like if I ever did it, that I would just be immediately judged, which I need to be judged. It is wrong. But that people wouldn't be understanding of that. And we need to be receptive to people that are struggling with things and that need our help. I'll be more than glad. If somebody is struggling with this particular thing of drinking, I am more than willing to talk to that person because I know what they're going through. I know the temptation, how it can be appealing. And I want to help those people. And we need to be like that. To not be like, well, I don't struggle with that, so I can't talk to you about that. We need to be receptive and not just have these things that we can't talk about because they're too taboo to talk about. God talks openly about everything in the Bible. God doesn't shy away from homosexuality. He rips it. That was a terrible word to use. God says it's wrong in the Bible. And sexual morality, drinking, God says they're wrong. He doesn't shy away from those topics, and we don't need to either. We need to be willing to listen to people about that. And like I was talking about, we need to get involved with various things. You can't be stressed enough. Just by being here, you're helping yourself. 2 weeks from now, you might not remember a single thing I said. One analogy I heard was, well, I don't need to go to church anymore because I can never remember what the sermon's about. And the analogy I heard was, well, do you remember what you ate on Monday night 4 months ago? Like, well, no. But you know you needed to eat, right? And it's like, well, yeah. That's kind of what we're doing. We're feeding on the Word of God. Just because we can't remember everything that's ever said, surrounding yourself with spiritual things, going to classes, hearing the Word of God, reading from His Word, whether we always can retain everything that's been said doesn't matter. We need to be constantly feeding on that, and that's how we grow stronger, is if we're doing those things. And there are people at our church now that struggle with these things, that don't come all the time, that are fading away. And I know y'all see them. I see them. I know you see them. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know if they're struggling with this particular thing or something else. But by their actions, I can see that they aren't very strong right now. And we don't need to let those people fade away. We don't need to let them fall away. In Romans chapter 9, I've always kind of just, I never have really like read this and fully appreciated the magnitude of what he said, of what Paul said. Romans 9, beginning of verse 1. I tell the truth in Christ, I am not lying, my conscience also bearing me witness in the Holy Spirit, that I have great sorrow and continual grief in my heart. For I could wish that I myself were accursed from Christ for my brethren, my countrymen according to the flesh, who are Israelites to retain the adoption, glory, the covenants, the giving of the law, service of God, and the promises. What I can tell, Paul is saying, I would give up my salvation. I would give up my life in Christ so that all these people can be saved, so that my countrymen can be saved. Think about how extreme of a statement that is. He would give up his own salvation so that these people can be saved. We need to have that same attitude and love for the souls of those around us. Those people that are fading away, we need to have that same love for their souls. Not saying that there isn't any way to give up our salvation so that they can have theirs. But that devotion that Paul had to saving them, to rescuing them, we need to have that same love for them and be willing to listen to those people. A lot of those people that are fading away, they don't know who they can talk to. They don't know who will hear them out, who will hear their side of the story, what their problem is. They don't know who they can talk to. We need to be there for them so they can talk to us. All it took for me, one of the only things it took for me was my brother just said, essentially, you need to straighten up. That might work for some people. Other people, you might need to be more caring and compassionate. But we need to pay attention to those people. I would like to think that I'm proof that something good can come out of that. I'm nowhere near perfect. I'm not anywhere like to the level of a lot of people that I know here. But I would like to think that something good can come out of that. One more passage in 2 Corinthians chapter 5. Well, sorry, two more passages. It is what it is. Three verses 14 and 15 first. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, again, verse 14. For the love of Christ compels us, because we judge thus, that if one died for all, then all died. And he died for all, that those who live should live no longer for themselves, but for him who died for them and rose again. And the grace of God needs to make us grateful. And those words kind of go together, grace and grateful. We need to be grateful for that, and we show that in how we live. That we don't disrespect. I disrespected Christ. I sinned against Christ all those years. And I aim to do my best now to live in Him, to not live according to the flesh. We need to stop being so selfish, looking at these worldly things and wishing that we could take part of them. And Blake, about a month ago, did that class on the song, When I Survey the Wondrous Cross. There's a line in there, all the vain things that charm me most, I sacrifice them to His blood. All those things, whatever you're struggling with, whatever your temptation might be, all those vain things, we need to sacrifice them for Jesus. We need to sacrifice them for His blood. And as I was talking about with the people, the Christians that you meet are so much better. Satan wants you to think that we're making this huge sacrifice, giving up this particular lifestyle, giving up this problem we have. He wants us to think that. But in reality, the blessings that we get in Jesus, the blessings we get in Christ, are far beyond that. Just the fellowship with Christians. I started noticing even things like a job I would get, or something would fall in place, or just various things. I started noticing that once I started fixing my life right, I started noticing that like a lot of the problems that I had were starting to go away. That God did start blessing me. And that's what people don't realize. If they would give up this temporary enjoyment, this temporary sin, temporary fulfillment that they get from that sin, and realize that the blessings that we get in Jesus are far greater. The peace of mind that we have serving Jesus is a lot better. And we need to realize that. In verses 18 through 21 of that same chapter, now all things are of God, who has reconciled us to Himself through Jesus Christ, and has given us the ministry of reconciliation. So we have been reconciled to Christ. God has reconciled us through Christ to Him. Now He's given us the ministry of reconciliation. Reading on, that is that God was in Christ, reconciling the world to Himself, not imputing their trespasses to them, and has committed to us the word of reconciliation. It's the second time He said that. Committed to us the word of reconciliation. He already said, has given us the ministry of reconciliation. Verse 20. Now then, we are ambassadors for Christ, as though God were pleading through us. We implore you on Christ's behalf, be reconciled to God. The third time. Now we're ambassadors. He said he's committed the word of reconciliation, given us the ministry of reconciliation. Now he said we are ambassadors for Christ, imploring people to be reconciled to God. Whether when David helped me or my brother, I don't know if they realized what they're doing was helping me be reconciled. But that's what God has given us. Because He has reconciled us, because we have been brought to Him through Jesus' blood, because Jesus died for us, we have been brought to God. Then we owe it to God to tell others about that. We have that ministry of reconciliation to talk to others about that, to tell them how they can be brought back. No matter how lost they are, no matter what their problem is, no matter if they drink all the time, if they're drug addicts, if they're homosexuals, no matter how lost they are, we are to preach to them a message of reconciliation, to bring them back to God. And that is our responsibility. We hear a lot about how society is awful today. Talk about that homosexuality, society is getting worse and worse. Yeah, society is pretty bad. I mean, there's no denying that. Yeah, but Jesus didn't give up on me. He didn't give up on me. And I don't know what my future holds with a job, whether it's preaching or whatever. I don't know what my future holds. But I don't plan on giving up on society. Jesus didn't give up on me. I don't plan on giving up on all those souls out there. I don't plan on giving up on my brethren. It showed that those annoying people you see out there, those drunks and football games, whatever it may be, that was me. It can happen. People can change. I don't plan on giving up on society. I think we can make a change for the better. And I hope that all of you can do the same thing. One last verse in Galatians 12. You don't have to turn there. Galatians 2:20. I'm sure most of you know it. I'd like to sing the song out of the Green Book right after this, if we don't mind. And then the lesson will be y'all's. Galatians 2:20 and through verse 21. I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave Himself for me. I do not set aside the grace of God, for if righteousness comes through the law, then Christ died in vain. Let's not set aside the grace of God. Let's not forget where we came from, forget all our problems. Let's remember that we are living through Christ. And as we sing this song, let's keep that in mind. Thank you for your attention. As we sing this, just remember that we are living for Christ and not ourselves. Do you know the number of the 15? Number 15. Does everybody have one, or at least look on someone? All right, number 15. We'll sing all three verses. I've been crucified with Christ, my Lord. I am dead to sin through His precious blood. I've been raised to life in the Son of God. By faith I walk with Him. I live for the One who died by living in Him who was crucified. Set free to walk with Him. Sing for a few minutes, in like 5 minutes, so for those that want to go, you may now.
Okay.